Are you following us on twitch.tv/WTR live? Do you have Amazon Prime? If so, you can link it to your Twitch account and subscribe to our Twitch channel for free with Twitch Prime. It's the easiest way to help support us for free.
Every Monday night, once Monday Night Raw ends, the Raw post show goes live.
You want to hear a story? Get the hell yeah!
Join Lindsay and Sir Rockin' as they give their opinions on what they liked,
what?
What they didn't like,
what?
And what left them completely confused.
What?
It's the Raw post show.
What?
Monday nights.
What?
11 p.m. Eastern.
What?
Live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
And that's the bottom line. Go Stone Cold Simpson.
Did you know you can use support a creator code ROCKNSOCK in the Fortnite item shop? That's ROCKNSOCK in the Fortnite item shop. That's a hashtag ad, because we are a hashtag epic partner.
Chris Jericho, and you're listening to Wild Talk Radio. Don't stop listening, or I will find you. I know where you live. I have Google Earth.
WildTalkRadio.com.
It's time to go all in with CB Radio Not So Live. Live. Hopefully no one will get into a fight backstage tonight. Oh, they did. Bloody hell. The show must go on then, with your hosts. The producer Sir Rocking. The intern and the Keishi.
Yeah. The altercation backstage. Things happened. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to CB Radio Not So Live, live right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network, here to cover AEW All in London. That was in front of 81,305 paid fans, setting a worldwide record, according to Tony Khan. Anywho, it was a show, it was a spectacle. We'll get into it all. As the intro mentioned, I'm the producer, Sirach, and we have the intern.
Hi, everyone. So we just finished the pay-per-view. We're ready to roll right into our discussion. Jesus God, this was long.
Well, one of us just finished it because his name is Keishi Matsunaga.
That's right. I finished it, like, with a minute before our Sunday night payback preview.
Our regularly scheduled Sunday night programming.
Yeah. There was a fight?
There was...
Yeah.
You didn't hear
you
about
You didn't
it?
Hear about this?
No, I just finished watching it.
Oh! Rock! Let's just lead with it. Let's
okay.
just roll with it.
Okay, so... Well, this has to do with the pre-show, so we'll get to it really quick. We got to talk about the pre-show. There was a couple things that happened. We had a Miro Powerhouse Hobbs contract signing confrontation. That happened.
The feed I had... only had an hour pre-show. So when you mentioned, like, oh, two things have already happened, I was like, I didn't see this.
I didn't know. I saw a clip on Twitter, and and it said, oh, they're live already. Like, wait, what? Because it said on all their graphics, 12 Eastern, for the 0 hour. Who knew they were going an hour before?
Oh.
Yeah, so they went out.
As someone who watched it later, I went on the YouTubes, and I clicked on the thing, and I kind of skimmed through a lot of that stuff just to get to the matches, but then I was like, oh, there's fighting. So then you go back, and then you go forward, and then you go back to find the right spot, and then you watch all the stuff.
Yeah, Rock was like, they've already had two angles in the pre-show, and I was just like, what do you mean the pre-show just started for me?
I was just trying to figure out how to stream YouTube to the TV and get the stream set up for later, and it's playing. And I'm like, okay, they're doing an angle. Sweet.
Then they did another.
Sometimes it helps to be late to the party.
Then they do another angle with Team
Grado,
Team TNA and Grado, Big Show, who knocked out Saddam Singh and like that quickly, easy one punch. So good to put over the new big guy when the old big guy just sits there and talks. So congrats. So that all happened. But the main stuff on the 0 hour consisted of two matches. We'll get to the one that came first, second, because we want to talk about the second one first. It was for the FTW Championship. It was Jungle Boy Jack Perry defending against Send Hook.
It's weird to watch Hook come out first.
Yeah.
Like, he went out there and he did his little, you know, like, sit his little brood in the corner. And then he had to realize, oh shit, I have to turn around because Perry's still coming out.
That is very true. Who came out with a limo. So that's where it's key. He came out with a limo entrance.
Mm-hmm.
So during this match, what did he quite say, Brent?
So Hook meets him on the aisle and they just fight by the entranceway for the majority of this match.
Yes.
As one does in an FTW match.
And they're fighting on the limo. They hit a suplex on the limo.
Mm-hmm.
Hook takes a standard suplex on the top of the limo. And then Jack Perry goes to the front windshield, knocks on it, and goes, "It's real glass, cry me a river," and proceeds to get put through said windshield by Hook.
By Hook. Real glass. Also, he had a nice rolling thunder at one point on the limo.
On the car.
Yeah, that was pretty nice.
That was pretty nice. So, all that, we'll get to the thoughts of the match in a second, but we're going to finish the story. Hook became your new FTW champion. Following that, there was an altercation backstage between Jungle Boy Jack Perry and one CM Punk.
Oh.
For those of you who do not know, this stems from Collision, 2 weeks ago?
It was a little bit more than that. The story came out 2 weeks ago. It's been about 6 weeks.
Okay. A couple of weeks ago, there was a tiff between Jack Perry and CM Punk because Perry, in his match on Collision, wanted to use real glass as part of his performance.
Mm-hmm.
CM Punk basically said no and told him essentially to wisen the hell up. There was some words exchanged about that. Hence, why such a big deal about what Perry said on a pay-per-view broadcast in front of everybody and right before the match with CM Punk.
So those two men met backstage. They got into each other's face. It's not confirmed who got into whose face, but because they're both sides are saying different stories.
Yeah, there's conflicting arguments.
There's
about
conflicting
what
who did who said what and how things went. Miro has come out and said some of it is BS because reasons. Faces were gotten into. Yes, Tig. Faces were gotten into, and some were then pie faced by Punk into Perry, and then grabbed them in a headlock or something. And
yeah. Someone got sent home from the venue early.
Both were asked to leave. That is the clarification to the story. One left earlier than the other, but both were told to leave the building. It's been a year, just about, since the brawl out.
Now we have brawl in.
We have brawl in. He cannot stay out of the drama. Like, legitimately cannot stay out of the drama.
Yeah.
Sucks.
Yeah.
Do their moms have to call and apologize for them after getting sent home? I mean, Jax may. He may need a note to be allowed back at AEW Collision on Saturdays. He may need a note from his mom.
His mom shows up to everything else, so.
Yeah, she does. We'll talk about another person's mom later in the show.
I was about to say, we had another mom sighting.
We had another mom sighting at the event. In the spectacle that was Stadium Stampede that involved things in forehead that we'll talk about.
Well,
that was special.
We're going to talk all about that here in just a few minutes. But
we do have another pre-show match to go over.
We do, but let's go into any additional thoughts on the FTW Championship. Was it the right finish with Hook regaining the belt?
I don't know. because Perry holding that belt added a level to him being a heel that I think it needed, because he held that title hostage. Now, I don't know how much longer he could have gone on, because he already beat Rob Van Dam. He was trying to retire it. Then Hook came out and said he wanted it back. I don't know if Hook having that belt really does anything for him. I understand it's a title on him, but it's an unrecognized title in that company, and Hook just feels like he's been treading water since his debut the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what putting the FTW title back on Hook really does.
We'll have to see. You okay with the finish, Cash?
Yeah, I mean, they kind of would. It would have been good if Jack had retained it. He could have done some probably good stuff, like his kind of heel work and wanting to, you know, like you say, Brent, holding the title hostage was good. I think they painted themselves in the corner when they said he was going to retire it, because whether he wins the title, the belt goes away, and then there's nothing for him. If he loses the title, the belt goes to Hook, and there's no more direction for him to go. So, I mean, I guess either way it would have been fine. Unless they want Hook to retire the title, because that makes more sense from a babyface standpoint, the fact that it's his dad's title, yada, yada, yada. And maybe they'll do that so that Hook can move on and do other things. I don't know. But, I mean, I wasn't mad at the finish. I wasn't like, oh my god, that's perfect either. The match was good, though.
It was a solid encounter. I'm going to make the executive decision. We're going to save the other pre-show match and tie it to the main event.
Okay.
Think that'll go better. So let's talk about the other person involved in Brawl In. CM Punk took on Samoa Joe to open up the official AEW All In London.
London loves themselves some Samoa Joe.
And Samoa Joe was having a blast during this match.
Boy, was he.
It's fun when you have Punk who knows Samoa Joe and Joe who knows CM Punk. Only because one of my favorite spots in this entire match is, so we have, it's become the meme of, you know, the Joe walk away from anytime someone does like a top rope move or the cross body. He just kind of is like, nope, piss off. I'm going to go over here. I like how he tried to do that and Punk just like waited and knew. And it was just like, oh yeah. No, he didn't get to walk away this time.
Yeah, but then they caught him later. It was well done.
Yeah.
It was a night, lots of teases of doing different things in this match. It was really good. I like the ole 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 haluva kick. Mm-hmm. That was a good spot in this match.
And I mean, we talked about Punk getting into problems backstage. It's nice to see that he channeled, you know, the past
brother, 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 oh, brother, brother.
Was it me, or did he, like, sit on Joe's head, pretty much?
He did.
Oh, yeah, he did that, and then also, you know, we couldn't see some of the other moves he did that he broke out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, this was good. We had a Pepsi Plunge sighting. Oh my god, internet freak out, he did the Pepsi Plunge.
It was a half-hearted attempt at a Pepsi Plunge, to be honest. Like, he kind of hooked Joe. Joe kind of jumped for it. Was like, I mean, it looked, it's what it was. It was more the RC plunge, you know, like it's not the full Pepsi plunge. It's just kind of the knockoff of it, but it was enough to like pass.
It passed. Okay.
Blue can plunge.
Yeah.
Pepsi blue. There you go. CM Punk is still your real world champion.
Yay.
I still hate this. I hate this angle so much. I really do.
Well, we know what it's going to lead to at some point.
I know. They just need to get there, because I didn't like it when it was like Cena and him both had the belts before in WWE. I always hate the idea of like there's this title, and then there's the real title, and then there's the unification match to really make it one. But I know it's partially to appease him. I know it's partially so that you have a title on Collision, but just get there. Sooner, please.
Just sooner rather than later. It was Takeshka and the Bullet Club Gold of Juice Robinson and Jay White taking on the Golden Elite, Kota Ibushi, Kenny Omega, Hangman, Adam Page. Six-man tag team spectacular action. It was good.
Yeah. I thought it was a much better showing from Ibushi than
yep.
The Blood and Guts. That's what they call that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think he was kind of hamstrung being in a hardcore match for his first time back.
I kind of feel like that's not, like, he probably doesn't do those on the regular.
Yeah.
And yeah, that probably wasn't the best place to put him in. This was much better. This would have been a better re-debut of Ibushi.
And I mean, for the Blood and Guts, it's more, as we'll learn during Stadium Stampede, those matches are more an exhibition for like a Moxley and an Eddie Kingston and that kind of group.
Mm-hmm.
Ibushi can do some hardcore stuff. He can work within some of those limits, but you can tell it's like, no, he's more of a wrestler. Mm-hmm. So having to incorporate things like, you know, a bed of nails just doesn't seem comfortable for him.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you a Jim Ross quote from this match. Are we ready?
JR.
Why is everything golden? Then poor Excalibur has to explain the meaning of it.
Oh, JR. JR. You know what? I know that someone else on this network does not like JR.
I feel like JR has become like AEW shit my dad says.
Yeah.
He's become essentially, he has become the voice for the voiceless in AEW.
We better JR quote for the next match, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah. I love that he was complaining about all of the people in the ring in the six-man match. It's just like, oh, JR, you're still whole. Like, even I have kind of acquiesced a little more of like, look, they're going to do their shit. I hate it, but they're going to do it. And he's still clinging to like, why are there people in the ring? Because JR. Just
JR things. Just JR thing. In the end, Takeshka rolled up Kenny for the 1-2-3. As
this
I put
it,
it needed to happen. But as I wrote in our the chat, went over like a wet fart.
Oh yeah,
it was a very not satisfying finish. It was out of nowhere, and I was like, what?
It's one of those things of, it is a very viable finish. A roll up is a very viable way, especially to pick up a surprise win.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is when you've got a match with Hangman Page, Kenny Omega, Kota Ibushi, Jay White, you want to see something definitive. And a roll-up is like kissing your sister.
Yeah.
You're just like,
For Devil's Advocate, that, and like, with the fact that it was Takeshita rolling up Kenny Omega, that's going to keep the whole Omega versus Don Callis thing going forever. Because you know on Wednesday, Don's going to come out and be like, Takeshita's the next god of pro wrestling. He beat Kenny Omega. He destroyed him. This sets it in stone. Takeshita's the better wrestler. And all the fans would be like, dude, it was a roll-up. Relax.
Well, but all he has to say is, Takeshka put Kenny's shoulders to the mat for three. Yeah. And there's no debating it. Even if it's a roll-up, it's just Takeshka pins Omega. That's all it needs to be.
The perfect
fans are going to hate it.
It's the perfect heel way to end that match to get more heat on those two and keep the story going.
It does, in fact, keep the story going. It was confirmed at the press conference that in 1 week's time, it will be Takeshka versus Omega at All Out. And a question from chat for Brent. Wait, is kissing your sister bad?
I don't know. I don't have a sister, but that's just the euphemism.
Only in certain parts of the world?
There, I hope.
We almost had that kind of sentiment in the main event, but they worked around it.
There you go on that one. So yeah, Takeshka and the Bullet Club Gold are your winners. It was, as we mentioned, the right outcome to further the story.
Overall story.
Yeah, the overall story that's being told. Speaking of stories being told, it's two of the greatest tag teams in the history of professional wrestling and the sports entertainment, according to themselves. The AEW World Tag Team titles on the line. FTR, which was a name created on their famous internet show, says the Young Bucks, taking on the Young Bucks, Matt Jackson and Nick Jackson.
Okay, I brought this up last night, Rock.
Yes.
When we did our Excalibur challenge. I just have to ask Keishi this.
Ooh.
Keishi, when it came to the build and this match in particular, in a company that was built on tag team wrestling, do you feel this match got completely lost in the shuffle?
I think, I'm going to say yes, but I think that has to do with kind of how it got built. I don't think, like, it just kind of came out of nowhere. It was like, we need to know who the best tag team is, so we want to fight. Okay, let's do it. We're going to keep coming out to save you because we want to make sure you're 100%. but there wasn't a whole lot else until you got those, like, the face-to-face, which was, what, Wednesday?
Yeah.
And then they had a couple little video packages, and I don't know if those were from Collision or they just put them together for the pay-per-view, because that was the first time I saw them, where they're talking about, you know, oh, yeah, we, you know, they started talking crap on their YouTube show, and I hold a grudge, and yada, 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 and we need to prove once and for all. So if they put that together just for the pay-per-view, then, yeah, like, not the greatest build-up, because they didn't really do a lot for me leading up that, like, made me go, aside from the fact that, like, you know, I think they were resting on their laurels along the lines of, like, these two guys each have a victory, so now we're going to have a rubber match. We don't need to do anything else to push this. Everybody knows who these tag teams are and why we're doing this, so we're just kind of going to, like, focus on other things and just rely on the fact that it's FTR versus the Young Bucks, and we don't need to worry about anything else. That's kind of where my head is at with the whole thing.
So I said this, the Young Bucks phoned in the build. That's the way it felt to me.
Sure, yeah. I mean, yeah. And I mean, it could be because they were doing so much for this all-in show that maybe they just decided that, hey, instead of trying super hard and getting super lost in the shuffle, we'll just kind of make it, we'll just rely on that and see what happens. I don't know.
So,
but
go ahead.
Yeah. Compared to everything else that they did for this show, it was the least focused on storyline.
FTR stands for Fuck the Revival, according
sure
to the according to the famous YouTube show. But as we saw in the crowd, it says Fear the Revolver.
I missed that. Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh, so bad, but so funny at the same time.
I'm yeah, it's reposting it in our group chat. You can see the picture. They held a sign, Fear the Revolver.
Yeah, that was right there, hard camera.
Yeah.
Oh,
that
boy.
Not a good... That I told Rock, like, the second he's posting that visual, I was like, did they really allow a sign on hard cam showcasing Fear the Revolver? Okay. And then, yeah, like, the image popped up right after. I was like, oh, God.
Damn. Do we think that was the first sign ever confiscated at an AEW show?
I don't think it was confiscated.
It was confiscated. Again, whoever the producer is, I hope it's not the same one that put, like, Tony, give the women's division a chance after the Britt Baker, Taya Valkyrie match.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There was also a sign, best in the world at being a bitch.
I saw that.
For CM Punk.
I saw that.
That was a good one.
If they only knew what happened that night.
Yeah. Na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, Cash has got a gun, was also sung in the crowd.
Wow.
London crowd never changed.
They never changed. So why is Fear the Revolver is because that Cash Wheeler was arrested.
He is arraigned.
He was arrested and arraigned for supposedly, allegedly holding a gun at another driver's face and stuff.
Well, I think it was pointing it at him.
Yeah,
while he was driving by.
Yeah, but still,
yeah, brandishing
enough.
A weapon in a road rage incident.
Yeah.
Yeah,
things like that.
No bueno.
No bueno. No. So that's why that was an interesting sign that made television and stuff. So there's that. So another JR-ism. Why wear new gear? I would wear gear I won in, because they were talking about the Revival's, FTR's brand new gear they have made for London. Not to mention that the Young Bucks were wearing new gear as well.
Yeah, rocking that Freddie Mercury shit.
But JR, I would wear gear I've won in.
I just love the fact that the Young Bucks got two entrances. One to get them to the beginning of the entranceway, and then the other to get them to the actual ring.
I mean, that's not super surprising.
That's commonplace.
I understand. Hey, Rock, speaking of entrances, how about those streamers?
Those streamers were just everywhere and hanging the entire night.
Yeah.
I love the fact, like, after the streamers hit, Rock just messages me, like, I'm going to be looking at these damn streamers
all
night.
They're going to be annoying all night because you just see them on hard camera the entire time, and they were there the entire night.
They're just dangling.
Yeah, they didn't test that shit out in the,
no.
In the, like, run-through, clearly.
No, because usually it's just, you know, okay, it hits the ropes, and then you have, like, the three techs around the ring, like, scrambling to get them on, which, by the way, I love the two trash cans just at the entranceway that Cash and Dax had to avoid for the streamers.
Yeah, so there was all that. So the match, into the match. It was a good match. It was slow, and they sort of phoned in for the first 15 minutes. But the final 5 minutes or so of this match were really good, with lots of near falls, lots of things that made you go, holy shit, is one of them going to win or not going to win? There was a moment, though. There was a moment where when the Bucks decided to
Matt Jackson.
To
I thought it was Nick.
No, it was Nick. It was Nick, Brent. You got it wrong.
Oh, Nick.
So
I can't. Whichever one has the hairline that recedes faster than the rainforest.
This is why I said, just for clarification, one of the Bucks.
Okay.
Had a situation where he had a pinfall on Dax Hardwood, and to make sure that the match did not end at that point, pulled the guy's arm, or pulled Cash's arm. It was Cash who was being pinned. It was Cash's arm that got pulled up.
He has a good firm hold on the wrist. One. Two, and you see him yank his arm up.
Like, I understand why he did it, because he wasn't sure about Dax getting there in time and he wouldn't kick out. But the camera work was right on the thing and showing him close up, and it's right there in his face where he's holding his arm the entire time and just lifts the wrist up, and just, it looks so stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, production person.
Cut to a different camera shot. Just cut to a different camera shot.
Yep. No, it was just... It was special.
It was right on it, like that. And anyway, they both hit each other's finish. They kicked out of each other's finish. We had many V-triggers. Not V-triggers, but the
BTE triggers.
BTE triggers from both sides. We had one of the no flips, but did a flip 450.
Cash did the 450 in a callback to the first match.
Yeah, they did that. So flip guys did flips.
One of the Bucks appears to have hurt his leg.
Oh, they always get hurt in some fashion.
Yeah, he was sitting there smacking his shin and calf, and hobbling pretty good. Not in a cell hobble, but more like a... I thought they were going to try and go for the Meltzer driver, and he was going to be like, I can't lift him right now.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. So, but still... In surprising fashion, FTR are you're still FTW, or not FTW, you're AEW Tag Team Champions of the World.
No handshake at the end.
No handshake in the act. Ooh, drama. Hashtag drama. No respect. You didn't feel.
So do we get FTR Bucks 4 now in 1 week?
I mean, you're not really supposed to, are you?
No, I don't think
so. No, because they called this the rubber match. They called this, like,
this is
the end of the trilogy. You can't really, even with the disrespect of the handshake, if you have that match in 1 week, especially with no build, it's really going to feel out of place. It's really going to feel lackluster.
Okay, so before we get into the next match, Chad, hey, this is your catch or reminder, if you have Amazon Prime, link it to your Twitch account. It's called Prime Gaming. Support the channel by clicking the purple rectangular button below the screen, which means you get ad-free content. You can use credit code ROCKETSOCK in the Fortnite item shop when you buy Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair, or the 17,000 pages of Marvel skins and whatever, because there's 49 tabs in the Fortnite item shop. Hashtag epic partner. Now then, the match everyone wants to hear and talk about. It is a spectacle known as Stadium Stampede. It was Eddie Kingston, Penta El Zero Mito, Orange Cassidy, Chuck Taylor, and Trent Barretta of the Best Friends taking on John Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, Wheeler Yuta, Santana, and Ortiz.
No, Mike Santana.
Mike Santana. Not to be confused with Carlos. But Mike Santana.
I love the fact that they said that on the broadcast, and the second they did, I texted in our group chat, Mike Santana? ? And Rock and I both went to Google at the same time.
We both Googled
to
make sure
that's legit.
It's his name, Mike Santana.
It is officially his Twitter handle now, Mike Santana.
Okay, so I wanted to turn this match off. This was a spectacle like no other. That was cringeworthy at times. Okay.
This was a cluster.
It was a cluster. So, for those new to the product of AEW and want to know what a Stadium Stampede match is, basically it's an anything-goes match all around, well, the stadium. They can fight, use weapons, anything and everything. Okay. So, they did a lot of different things. We paid tribute to Terry Funk with a branding iron. as a weapon. We had lots of blood very early on. We had multiple...
Three minutes in, Moxley bled.
We had multiple camera shots of them trying to keep up with all the action, no matter where it went in the building.
Stay tuned and picture in picture.
Picture in picture. We need the NFL red zone with all the boxes. That's what they should have. Like the big center and then all the boxes and quad cams and everything.
Have the AEW control center.
The AEW control center.
I don't know what that is, so I'm just going to assume I'm going to agree with you.
It's an, like, for NFL on the red zone, it's like an Octobox. They can show you all eight games going on at once.
Oh, wow.
Casey, let's put it this way. Picture if you showed, like, hockey games all going on at the same time with, like, two columns of four.
Oh, so it's like a back computer with sports.
Basically. Just every game playing at the same time, so you can just, your eye jumps around and watches whatever game you want to and whatever moment's on.
That seems like a lot.
But then they cut into one game and then they take you back and then can show you.
Yeah, no, I like the concept.
It's great.
For sure.
So, yeah, and yes, take Power by AWS.
AWS, yeah.
We had an umbrella because, you know, they're in London. They have to have the black umbrella. And then there's these moments where they want to get vicious and violent, Brent, and they just start stabbing things in the head of their...
So, yeah. What happened in this particular moment was, in the ring, you had Jon Moxley and Penta fighting. Moxley reaches into his bag of goodies and pulls out bamboo skewers like you would do for shish kebabs.
Uh-huh.
We've seen this before in a Moxley match. I want to say we've seen it with Penta as well. As Rock pointed out in the match, you knew this was not going to end well for Moxley.
Nope.
And it did not. Because Penta got a hold of said skewers, put them onto Moxley's head, and smacked them into the head. At which point he lets go of the skewers, and they're all just sticking there like some god-awful mohawk. Oh. It does not look good.
I wanted to turn the thing off. I complained to a lot of people about this. I was not having fun.
No, it was this. This was. I understand for Stadium Stampede, you want to be somewhat shocking, and it's like, you know, you want to have stuff that people haven't seen, especially for like the London crowd. It's like, okay, we want to ramp it. The problem is AEW, every time they have one of these matches, has to go, okay, what did we do last match? We now need to take that next step. We need to do something even more. And your last big match like this was the Blood and Guts. And that's where we got the Bed of Nails. That's where we got some of these other moments. And we're getting to the point where your next step is about half a step away from a snuff film.
So
it's uncomfortable to watch is the problem. Like, you're watching Orange Cassidy get gigged in the head with a fork, and it's not something where you're like, oh, that's cool. You're going, Jesus Christ. And then you've got, like, Eddie Kingston and Jon Moxley going head-to-head while both are bleeding. And I mean, legitimately, forehead-to-forehead. And the whole time I'm watching this going, that's not sanitary.
No.
We had barbed wire boards. We had everything. Everyone's bleeding. Everyone's just taking shots to the head with chairs. Forehead to forehead. God damn it, Tig.
Funny.
Damn it. It was a lot. There was a lot going on in this. So at one point, and there's other things to get into, but Penta got taken out at one point just to reveal his other dark side, Brent.
Oh, yes,
Penta,
the costume
Obscuro.
Change.
Dark side.
I forgot about the costume change.
Dark side where he turned into red, not black, but red. So dark side, yeah.
Well, the funny thing is so he gets hit, and I missed the exact moment, but I just look over and I see, like, the trainers taking him away, and in the very corner, I look down, and there's Santana, Mike Santana, and he goes over to one of the stagehands or doctors, and you can see him going, like, what the hell's going on? And the stagehand is making a, like, kind of thing with his neck, and I was just like, oh, so this is probably not good. Only for 5 minutes later, he comes out in his costume change. You know, he had his quick change, and then they go to try and do a move at the entranceway with the ladder. The ladder starts to break.
I mean, that's because it was the wrong type of ladder.
Right. But this has been one of my big problems with AEW.
Oh my God.
It's when you have something like that happen, Keishi, what should you do? If your prop is breaking and it's supposed to support the weight of two people, what should you do?
I mean, you should test it beforehand or reinforce it beforehand or make sure that it's not going to break beforehand.
I would say if you're sitting there, like when Powerhouse Hobbs tried to climb a ladder and it's getting wobbly and it's about to fall over and they have to get four referees to hold the ladder, my response would be, get a new fucking ladder.
Well, they probably didn't have one. But at least in this instance, they didn't bring out like 16 billion refs. They just had Alex Abrahantes hold on to it, which made sense.
Which makes sense because he's the manager.
And he hit, you know, the Canadian Destroyer off the ladder through tables, which still looked ugly as hell.
Okay. Yep. I'm going to say some things. Guy, the guy, Trent Barreto, who had a surgically repaired neck, should not be taking things on steel steps or going through tables where he's just jamming his neck harder and harder and harder. Because guess what? That's going to, you know, create more problems.
It's fused now. It's fine. It's
no, it's not. That's not fine. That's not how that goes. Fusion is just a Band-Aid. It's not real. If you break it again, you're fucked.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. One. This is what Tig said in the chat. The one who got skewered actually was just being bamboozled.
God damn it, Tig. God damn it.
Well done.
Number two. We're going to read this recap as it goes. Barreto fought back, but Moxley ended up dumping him on top of a door board that was wrapped in barbed wire. Ortiz hit a top rope splash on Barreto and covered him for a two count. Moxley pile drove Barreto on top of ring steps. Ortiz jabbed the bloody Cassidy with a fork. It's a recap. Following this, at this exact moment, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We talked about earlier in this show about mothers. Time for mothers. Sue shows up in her minivan that she drove across
the pond
somehow.
That's not true. It was a different minivan.
But she drove her.
I'm pretty sure someone else was driving.
Either way, Sue pulled up in the van with her food.
Yep. Her tray of cookies.
Her tray of cookies. That they wanted saved for catering, according to the announcers, but was not a thing. Then she handed her son Trent Barreto cooking sheets to use as weapons on the other participants. But before all that, as Sue pulled up, this is why she got mad. A bloody John Moxley decided to kiss her before it all happened.
That's fun.
Ew.
He said sarcastically. That's fun.
That's fun. You know, the one that was skewered in the head.
Yeah.
Or bamboozled.
You know, forceful kissing in 2023 is totally acceptable.
Mm-hmm. So there's the mothers involved in professional wrestling. Yes, Brent.
Wait, there was one thing I have to go back to for the intro that made me chuckle. Rock, did you pay attention to Orange Cassidy's intro video?
No, I did not.
I saw bits of it.
At one point, he's walking out, and you know it's like, insert picture here, and he had like, a picture of a London telephone booth, you know, fun stuff like that. There's one picture of a stick figure Orange Cassidy holding the skewered head of Wheeler Yuta with the spine attached a la Mortal Kombat.
Nice.
It was one of those things, like, I'm just watching the intro and I was like, wait, did I just fucking see that?
You did just
and
fucking
then it pops
see
up
that.
Again and I was like, yep. Yes, I did. Oh. And it's labeled Wheeler.
Oh, and I got this wrong. It was Sue.
Nice.
I love how a pile driver onto the steps has become a transition move and not a finish. Anymore.
Yeah, it's to the guy with the surgically repaired neck.
They nail him with it. It should be an absolute three count. It should be we're going to wheel his ass to a local medical facility with, you know, an O and a U somewhere in there because it's London.
Hey, now.
And I'm just saying. and instead, it's, nope, he kicks out at two.
Yep. So, that's bad. So, what we've seen so far, we've had mothers driving their minivans. We've had wrestlers being skewered in the head with bamboo. We've had cooking sheets to the head. We've had forks driven into skulls. We've had men go through tables and ladders and everyone's bleeding and everyone's been swung around by Claudio Castagnoli. We then get in the ring with one Orange Cassidy who has a roll of duct tape and starts taping his hand the opposite way with the sticky side out. That way, he can stick his hand into a bucket of glass for his orange punch.
Yeah. Okay, am I the only one that thought of Hot Shots Part 2?
No. No, you're not.
Like, Charlie Sheen has his cloth-wrapped hands, and the opponent dips it into glue and glass and, like, screws and all that kind of stuff, and yet Charlie Sheen goes, chocolate sauce.
M&M's.
M&M's, gummy bears, sprinkles. Like, I was waiting for Orange Cassidy to pull something like that out, and I was just like, oh, come on, do it.
So we built up to the spot with the orange punch. It was missed a few times. We had a bickering between Kingston and Moxley. They go falling backwards through the barbed wire board together. And then Orange Cassidy hit Claudio with the orange punch with the wrapped fist of glass for your win in Stadium Stampede. I don't want to see this crap again.
I get that death matches have their place with certain fans. In the same respect, that's what GCW is for.
We have reached the saturation point
with the Stadium Stampede, with the anarchy in the arena, with Jon Moxley being busted walking open, or, you know, busted open walking to the ring.
Every week. He's bleeding every week.
We've become desensitized to what happens in these matches, that they have to elevate it to make it impactful again, and it's getting to a very dangerous point.
Because I feel like we just seen anarchy in arena. We just seen blood and guts. We didn't need this.
But it was London, and you have to, in their mind, it was London, you have to do something big for them.
But here's the thing, you're in London, you're in front of 81,305 paid attendants for this show, and you're fighting not in the ring, so what are people doing? Watching the giant screens above the ring.
Yep.
And in all honesty, like, and this is just my opinion, people can agree with me or not, I don't really care. I enjoyed the Stadium Stampedes better when there was no crowd, and you could do stuff legitimately in a stadium. It made more sense.
Yeah.
It was more entertaining. You were able to capture all of those things without getting pulled in multiple directions. So, like, I think the Stadium Stampede should have gone by the wayside as soon, or they, and you can't film it beforehand because then, once again, like Rock said, everybody's watching the screens. That is the type of thing that made sense for the time that they had it and what they did it in with the first one, and probably should have been left there.
Well, to me, like, Anarchy in the Arena is the hardcore match.
That's fine.
What it's labeled for.
Yeah.
Stadium Stampede, to me, was always the goofy match. Because from the first one you had, it was like Adam Page, you know, in the bar with Jake Hager.
Right, and also riding the horse. The Matt Hardy and Sammy Guevara.
The golf cart.
Yeah.
You had Matt Hardy being dunked in the water, and all the versions of Hardy were coming out of the water, and Santana and Ortiz were looking at each other like, what the hell is this shit?
Yeah.
Like,
it's a cinematic match.
Right. Stadium Stampede should be something where it's like you had elements in which you couldn't do in other matches, and it's like, yeah, it makes it fun to watch. Stadium Stampede now has, or at least with this, just became another Anarchy in the Arena, and it was uncomfortable, and it's like you said, there's no purpose for it, and in fact, it's like you have killed the overall feel of this match with what we just saw.
Indeed. But Kingston and crew get the win. See what happens next. Looks like
I like the visual of Eddie sitting there through the board with John, and he just has his finger in front of John's face. Like, it's just,
they're both just hurting each other.
Yeah, we've just both been through the table, we're in barbed wire, and it's like, you know what, screw you.
Indeed. Up next, it is the Women's World Championship, Hikaru Shida, Toni Storm, Saraya, and Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. Four-way match. Saraya came out to Queens We Will Rock You, had her entire family, which means you knew one thing and one thing only. She was winning because reasons. Toni Storm's entrance was great. I loved everything.
The Hollywood theme works for her.
That's going to be an awesome entrance. Like, that's a great character. She's going to be good. She's going to go out of control now, and it's just perfect.
From what we saw tonight, this is going to be Sunset Boulevard. But with a young actress, it's going to be amazing to watch.
It's going to be great.
I will say, Rock, you put it very perfectly when we saw what match was following the BCC.
Yeah, they don't give these women a chance. Like, come on. They could have gone before this. They could have gone before Stadium Stampede and the crowd was great. But you just see men stabbing each other in the head with skewers and forks and knives and everything. And then you give the women a match where they're like have 8 and a half minutes to wrestle.
The crowd was completely out of it, aside from the fact of when Saraya had her moments.
Hikaru Shida got a couple of chances. Britt got a couple of spots, but it just, and they only got 8 and a half minutes, like one women's match. Y'all, internet, you all complain about WWE and the lack of time and the stories for the women. Da 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 da. They get, and then everyone does the time thing, the timestamps of how much women's wrestling gets shown. 4.5, 5-hour pay-per-view, 8 minutes, 8.5 minutes. Come on.
Yeah.
I want the timestamps, please. Well, come on. Police it out.
Here's the other kicker for this.
What?
You didn't even fly out your other women's champion to this match or to this event to do like press or anything like
that's,
that.
That's fine. They were only there for a couple days. That's not a big deal.
I get that, but it's still just a matter of like, it doesn't look good when Chris Statlander is sitting at home with her title watching the show.
Yeah, but I understand.
It's not a good signal.
It is and it isn't. To me, that's not, someone sitting at home is not a big deal.
But speaking of this, even though they didn't touch on it, except for at the very end of the match, in talking about it, someone was in the crowd.
Yeah.
They didn't reference it during this match, though.
They showed her very early on in the pre-show, the first hour of the pre-show, not the one they told you about, but the first hour, Mercedes Monet. The first hour of the 0 hour, so the 0-0 hour. They talked about her. They showed her later in another quick thing. So she'll be coming in, most likely. They've had the talks. They have the discussions. Mercedes will be coming in when she's cleared. She's not cleared to wrestle, and it's going to be a few minutes before she's actually cleared. But to this match, it was solid. It was fine. It was, they did it enough. I liked the sharpshooter stomp spot. That was clever.
Wow.
That was really good.
Really good.
I like that they made emphasis that Hikaru Shida was not opening, like she was forcing her teeth down so she could not hit the lockjaw.
Yep. Which is like probably the first time someone's done that, so that was a nice touch.
That was a very nice touch. Saraya and Tony argued a few times about well, I thought we talked about this.
That was funny. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, the subtle dissension that happened was fun.
You had Ruby Soho come out, try to get everyone, back in order, but didn't quite work out for it all on that one. But Saraya, with a can of spray paint into the eyes of her partner, Tony Storm, drops her. 1, 2, 3. Your winner and new AEW Women's World Champion, Saraya. Full circle comeback story capped off in her home country. Right finish, right story. Sent the fans home happy with that one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I liked the subtle difference of like the other two were kind of in the middle of something, not just like on getting knocked off the ring to the outside.
Rolling around back and forth in the lockjaw and pins.
So like they couldn't see what was happening behind them. I thought that was really, really smart.
Mm-hmm. So that was good. Up next, it was the coffin match between Darby Allin and the Stinger, taking on Christian Cage and Swerve Strickland. Sting came out to his WCW theme of Seek and Destroy. For all those people who remember, that was a theme he used at one point.
All five of you.
All five of you who remember Seek and Destroy. Three of
a little bit.
Three of us on the call were three of those five. Remember.
Yeah, probably. I wonder how much it cost
between
that song twice.
Between We Will Rock You and Metallica and everything they used on the show.
Bush with Machine Head
that they put in the theme.
I feel like Bush is the official theme. Probably didn't cost as much as Seek and Destroy twice.
No, but we heard Machine Head. over
14 times.
Over again.
I mean, yeah, but they got a little bit of like a, this is the official song, so probably.
Yeah.
They got their money's worth out of the license.
So we had Joker Sting and the red shirt and the Joker makeup and Swerve's rapping and,
right? Oh, that was awful. I'm sorry. Okay. AEW, from a production standpoint, let me help you with something. If you're going to have a live performance, use the instrumental track. Do not use the track that has the lyrics already there. Because when the guy can't hit the words, it is blatantly obvious.
And it's not like it's hard for them to get the instrumental. In fact, Swerve probably should have just been like, hey, here's the instrumental.
Yeah, here's this. Yo, dog, we're going to drop the words off and you're just going to rap us to the ring. Sound cool? Yeah, man, let's roll. Instead, they play the actual theme song and the poor guy who's rapping them to the ring just can't keep up.
I think the problem, though, was like, you can't do the instrumental because then you don't get the Swerve parts, which is probably why they left it. So then it just becomes super unfortunate for the guy who's rapping the chorus all the way to the ring and having it not sync up properly. And they probably should have thought about that beforehand. I'm sure there was a way they could have been like, oh, we'll keep my shit in.
It's called re-record. We'll
drop off that layer.
Yeah, you could have done something. So, on to this matchup that we saw some things, including Darby Allin bringing coats for both him and Sting to use in a match with thumbtacks on the back of them. The key word, thumbtacks on the back of them. So,
what do we get?
So Darby does a splash and turns around and uses the back of his jacket to have the thumbtacks on it. Meanwhile, Sting, who's known for a stinger splash, which is him just running and splashing you front way right into your body, did not turn his back around with the thumbtacks, so he's just using his own regular move and not the thumbtacks for the entire spot of how his son brought him a jacket to wear during the wrestling match.
Well, were there not thumbtacks on both sides of his, though?
No, there wasn't. It was just a black front.
Okay.
The funny thing is...
Hold on. If there were, the jacket was open enough where nothing was going to hit.
I mean, yeah. I was going to touch on that for that. And then, like, I mean, yes, there were, but he should have done it up. But then that opens up, like, a whole other can of worms of, like, then all of a sudden he has to unzip it for something. And
I thought two things. Number one, I love the look on Sting's face when Darby's like, here! And he tosses in the jacket, and Sting looks at it at first like, the fuck am I going to do with this?
Yeah.
And then he kind of puts it on, and yeah, does the stinger splash where nothing hit. I thought for a second he was going to do it, but he was going to put his arms through the sleeves and wear it so that it was on the front.
That would have made sense.
That would have made it would have been like, all right, it's on the back, but I'm going to do this for that spot. And then he could like take it off and do the beat of the chest and everything. But no, he puts it on normal and does the stinger splash. And it's just like, well, that was a move.
Yep. But Darby made sure to get that extra one in.
He did.
Yeah, he ran over
like, his He, like, ran by his thing. He's like, excuse me. Boom.
Yeah.
I'm going to hit this.
Okay, so Luchasaurus was there helping Christian a bunch. So you had Nick Wayne come out who took, onto the chokeslam onto the skateboard. Ooh, that.
And then he got taken like so many a cane victim all the way to the back.
My shoulders hurt just thinking about landing on the skateboard like that. That just seems like it would hurt.
Yeah.
So we had many teases of people going into the coffin. There was a, he was so Darby Allin's one of his moves is called the coffin drop. So they had I don't remember who was laid out, but someone was laid out on it.
It was Swerve.
Swerve was laid out on.
Yeah, Swerve.
And Darby goes to the top rope, and Sting just walks away. So it's like his boy's gonna hit it, and he missed. And the commentary went, "Well, that was a coffin flap."
Okay, that made me chuckle.
I mean, I don't mind that Sting walked away because then it's like, well, now it makes sense that Swerve was able to move because no one's watching.
Yeah, it made sense, but it was the coffin flop.
I put something in our comments. It was another comment that was said by the team when they were talking about. So Darby, tries to hit the coffin drop to the outside. just smacks into it. And they show the replay of it. And they're just like, oh my god, Whiplash as his head hit off the coffin.
Wait.
You can clearly see on the replay, he's holding his head in. It comes nowhere near the coffin. And it's just like, guys, I know that's like the point you're trying to get across, but if it's not shown, don't touch on that.
Yeah.
I mean, they have tiny monitors. It's hard for them to see everything.
Yeah, it's very hard for them
to
see.
Let's go with that.
So we learned that only one man had to go in the coffin, not two, just one. So that answered a question we had the other day.
Yep.
Well, and they mentioned it at the beginning of the match. So
they did.
Kudos to them on that.
That's what we mean. Like, going into the match, my whole thing was like, do you have to put two people in? Is it just the one?
Because
for a tag team, it's like it would make sense that both people had to be thrown in there. You know.
All the things. So you had to make par was in there, just every part of the body. We also had a cricket bat for Sting's bat, so that was cool. That helped him survive at one point with the bat, so not everything was closing in the thing. But even Brent Hare.
Yeah, so this entire match we've had, like, okay, Sting used the bat to prevent the coffin from fully closing. At one point you had Swerve, like, his fingers sticking out. The casket is what was preventing the victory from happening. And then he'd, like, worm his foot out. But at the very end of the match, Swerve Strickland gets thrown into the coffin. They close the door. His dreads are hanging out the casket. And the match is over. I was like, apparently not every piece has to be in now?
They got to the finish. That's all that mattered.
Yeah.
Darby and Sting are your winners.
Yay.
Up next, Will Ospreay, Chris Jericho, with the most traditional wrestling match of the show. We had Judas live entrance by Fozzy. This was good. Will Ospreay won.
It was a thing.
I thought it was well done.
It was, and there's nothing to mock or meme or anything about it. It was a traditional wrestling match. And Will Ospreay won. Then Jericho and Sammy had some drama.
Yep, Jericho left, and he left his buddy in the ring alone. Sammy had a sad.
Yeah.
This was a good match. I can't, anything you want to mention from it, or just, it was good.
It was good. You saw Ospreay perform well in front of, you know, the English fans. They're setting up of if Ospreay does come to AEW, which all intents and purposes seem to be pointing to.
Yeah.
Like, this is a good win to put in Ospreay's cap. And Jericho, of course, is good at putting over talent when he chooses to.
There you go, when he chooses to.
Yeah, like I don't know if Orange Cassidy still has gotten over from Chris Jericho, but...
not from Chris Jericho.
But,
no.
So,
but, I mean, in the end, it's like, yeah, Ospreay comes out looking good. It helps the fact of, like, you know, United Empire got a win. Don Callis's family looks a little stronger because Takeshka won and, you know, his associate Ospreay won. Yeah. So good on them for that.
Jericho's Oz cutter was a little scary. it's like he went to do it and then instinctively was trying to do a line salt and like midair was like, oh, wait a second.
Oh,
yeah. He had a little extra rotation on there that I don't think he was planning on. It was just like, oh no, I'm not backflipping.
Here we are. So, yeah. Ospreay is your winner. It is the AEW Trios titles on the line. The House of Black, Malakai Black, Brody King, and Buddy Matthews with Julia Hart, who had a great tribute to Bray Wyatt with the Lantern and the Fireflies. Awesome.
It was subtle. It was something where it's like, yeah, they paid tribute, but it wasn't like beating your head with it. It wasn't, you know, trying to like cash in on a tribute. It was just like
subtle.
You saw Matthews like very simply pull the lantern out, put it onto the rampway. The fans all put out the fireflies, and it was like that quick moment done onto the match.
The match as they took on the Acclaimed, Max Caster and Anthony Bowens, along with Daddy Ass. Oh wait, it was not Daddy Ass this time. It was Badass Billy Gunn. Didn't know.
I love that, like, all pre-show, they're trying to put over the fact of, like, this is Badass Billy Gunn, this is serious. Like, the House of Black doesn't know what they've done bringing this forth. And I just want to be like, no offense, Billy Gunn is the fifth member of DX in the hierarchy.
I mean,
no, No offense to him.
He did push Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie off the stage in a dumpster.
Oh, I get that, but he's also been rockabilly.
Yes.
It's one of those things, like, I understand the man is, what is he, like 6'5", 75, yes, like at 50 years or 52 years old. It's like, yeah, dude is solid. But at the same time, I'm going, yeah, but like 2 weeks, you know, like 3 weeks ago, he's sitting there fucking scissoring his adoptive kids and acting like a goofball. I'm sorry. I can't take that seriously. I wouldn't look at him and go, oh, yeah, no, shit got real.
For the record, daddy ass, 59.
Oh, 50. Well, you're right. I'm sorry. 59.
For daddy ass.
Between Sting, Jericho, and this match, there was no, or there is one person at least 52 years of age in the ring at one point. Indeed. Not including Christian, who's 49.
So the Acclaim hit the scissor me timbers on Julia Hart's yambag.
right in the labia.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Oh, the commentary had a little fun with that one. Anyway, you're new.
It was a nice callback to Dark Elevation.
You're new AEW Trios Champions, the Acclaim and Badass Billy Gunn.
I'm not gonna lie, I am shocked.
I did not expect them to win.
Either. I did.
You predicted it, but at the same time, it was like the House of Black haven't really had anything else going on. The Trios titles and the House of Black rules match was like all they really had. And I get you want to reward the Acclaim. I get you want to give Billy that one last run.
It's you built the fake retirement. Fake retirement return leads to title.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But look at Mark Henry. He didn't get a title from his fake retirement. He got a title back.
But that doesn't mean anything. This was good retirement. This was not Swerve Jacket. This was a retirement angle they tried to run.
Yeah.
Anywho, let's talk about the pre-show first match. It was the ROH Tag Team titles on the line. Aussie Open took on MJF and Adam Cole, baby. Better than you, baby. We had the kangaroo kick.
Holy shit, the fans lost their minds for that.
We all saw the inflatable kangaroo getting bounced around the audience.
Yes.
The one person holding the inflatable kangaroo on hard cam was great. Yeah.
And then the double clothesline for your win and new ROH Tag Team Champions, MJF and Adam Cole, baby. Now, that leads to your main event of MJF and Adam Cole for your AEW World Heavyweight Championship. Friendship abound. They wore their tag shirts. They pulled them out and they wore them throughout the match. And sportsmanship. And then eye pokes. And then Cole went really hard.
While
MJF was trying to sell, like, we're friends.
Look, MJF said from the beginning, he's a scumbag, all right? He's trying to do good, but he's a scumbag at heart. We saw this.
We saw it. But then they did everything about it. But the confliction for MJF with whether do I use the diamond ring or not? What do I do? And then Adam Cole's just doing it and just going to eye poke and slap and just do everything he can because he wants to be the world heavyweight champion no matter what.
I mean, they did have some good parts in there where he like did something and was like, oh, I think I went a little too far.
Yeah, they did.
The suplex on the stairs. Like, MJF sold that as well as anyone could, where he did not move for the 9 count. And then finally he did kind of the, was it Fosbury flop of the... Was it the back jump that you see in track?
Yeah.
Of getting into the ring?
Then the confliction of the tombstone piledriver. MJF could have done it, but he didn't. But Adam Cole did on the table. Mm-hmm. That was really good. A lot of the stuff was really well done. It was a lot of comedy that kind of just sort of took away from parts of it. But it was really good. And then we ended in a draw.
That the second it got, they did the double pin off of the double clothesline. And it was 1, 2, 3. Like, I messaged her. I was like, there's no way you can end the pay-per-view with this. Like, I get it if you want to get this match to All Out. I get if you want to extend this that 1 week and you can be like, well, there's conflict. There's no way you end the pay-per-view in London on a draw and send people home with that.
Yeah.
For a second, I was like, if they ended it this way, you're going to, like, not only will you have a riot from the fans in London, but people will talk about how shit this show is at the very end.
Yeah. So then we got the restart. This is London. We're going to get a finish. And we're going to 5 more minutes. No, we're just going to go till there's a winner. And then
there's a fucking winner.
Yeah. And then so at one point he tries to pull out the diamond ring and he's conflicted and he puts it back into his tights. Roderick Strong comes out in his neck brace, kicks MJF in the balls and says, "Hey, Adam, do it. Hit him with the move." So he hit him with the Panama Sunrise and then the boom with the knee. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And there's no referee because we had a ref bump. And then Strong gives him the belt and he's like, "Do it, Cole. Do it, Adam." And Adam then takes off his shirt. He's like, "Ooh," crowd goes, "Ooh," because he now took away off his jersey from the Better Than You, Baby. And then he tossed the belt aside. And then Roderick Strong is screaming at him, and Adam Cole says, "Get the hell out of here." And then the inside cradle once again gets MJF the win.
Oof.
JF is still your champion. And then Adam Cole's just mad in the corner, and MJF is just, "We're good. We're still
hey,
together.
They still love you. Listen.
Listen to the people. We're back. Come on. Hold on a second. I'm going to get the belts. We're going to have the belts." And then he throws the belts aside, and MJF is like, "Oh, you did what? What the hell did you just do?" And then, "You piece of shit. You were never my friend. You only wanted the title. Here, take this belt. Just do it. Get on with it." So he stands up and it's like, holds his arm. "Hit me. Hit me. Hit me with the belt." Roddy's back out going, "Do it. Do it.
Hit him. Hit him."
Then Adam Cole throws the belt down, and then Roderick Strong walks away pissy, and the Kingdom have to just console him. And then MJF and Adam Cole hug in the middle of the ring, and the crowd goes wild.
Hug it out. Hug it out. Hug it out.
And that's how All In ended. All In was a really good show. The white ropes were a little weird. Because they're usually...
Oh, I didn't even notice.
Did you notice?
Yeah, it was white, pure white ring ropes.
Yeah. Not like, once you said it, I was like, white.
It felt like a WWE show. it was the thing. So overall, good show. Really good show. Fans went home happy. Crowd was lovely. And they were into everything. They'll be back in a year. That is great.
That was a nice little touch at the end of the show where they're like, "Hey, guess what? All In is in London forever."
Yeah.
The one thing I will say is if you're a fan in Chicago right now, I'm feeling a little underwhelmed by the show that's supposed to take place in 7 days.
Yeah, well, Chicago gets like 15 shows a year.
They'll be fine.
I get that.
No, and they get 4 this week, so they're fine.
I get that. You've now announced as well from Tony Khan that, yeah, All In, All Out, back-to-back weeks, that's going to be a thing.
But you get AEW Rampage and Dynamite and Collision. You get all out. You're fine. You'll get to see all your favorite superstars. You'll be fine. Just buy all the tickets. Give them all your money.
I get that. You're trying to sell me a pay-per-view that, if I'm not in Chicago, I'm supposed to be invested in when 3 or 4 matches have been announced right now. It's going to be 7 more being added with no build, and I'm supposed to care.
It'll be fine. You'll be fine. You'll be fine. But you got to give us housekeeping now.
All right. I shall give you housekeeping. So this was a thing for Pick'em.
I did not do well.
No. Well, you did over 500. We'll put it that way.
Oh, okay. I'll take that then.
In sixth place, tied for sixth place, is myself and the expert.
Ooh.
She did not have a great week, but that's okay. You know, every once in a while,
we blame the other circumstances for this one. This one gets thrown out.
That too.
She was distracted. There's a lot going on. So this week does not count for the expert.
Yep. All right. For me, it was just a bad week. Like, I was 0-2 on the pre-show, and I was like, yeah, this is not going to go well.
Okay. What else?
In fifth place at 5 and 6, so just under 500, is Subway.
Okay.
In fourth place at 6 and 5, so just over 500, is one Keishi Matsunaga.
Yay.
And tied for first place is the Inanimate Objects, otherwise known as the 8-Ball, the Wheel, and the Producer.
Haha. What was the number?
7 and 4.
I'll take it.
So, not great all around, but good enough to win.
But I got ones that differed. I got the Acclaimed, and I got the other ones. So
you got the Acclaimed. You got the three of us picked Soraya because we knew where that was going. Yeah. We all got the BCC wrong.
I mean, I made my picks very hastily. I was out of town, and I was like, oh, here's a channel. I should submit picks. Bang, 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 bang. Okay, so, I mean, I probably should have put a little bit more thought into it.
Brock is the only one on the network to pick Bullet Club Gold to win.
Yeah.
And of the three of us, Keishi was the only one to pick FTR retaining.
Hey, look at that.
Because Brock and I thought there was going to be some retribution or some repercussion for getting arrested.
Well, maybe that'll happen next Sunday.
We'll have to see. But that'll do it for CB Radio Not So Live, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Tomorrow night, Monday night, it's the Raw Post Show, 11 p.m. Eastern. Thursday night, we're going to have a moment or two. It's the Rack. We're going to talk about Bray Wyatt and everything that happened. Lindsay will give her thoughts and opinions and feelings. Thursday, 10 p.m. Eastern. We'll also preview Payback, which means there's no Fortnite with Friends this Saturday because we're watching the premium live event known as Payback. But we'll be live with CBRO live 11:30 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. Sunday, there's no WTR because we're watching All Out, which means we're probably next Monday, week from Monday, probably do this again following the Raw Post Show.
Yeah, the CB Radio Not So Live Labor Day special.
For All Out. We're probably doing this again. If there's something we want to talk about. If not, this was enough. We'll figure it out. I don't know how much more AEW I want to talk about. We'll figure it out.
We could cover it a little bit quicker if we really wanted to.
Maybe we'll condense. We'll figure that out. Got some time. So we'll probably be live next Monday with more content. It's all the things. It's CB Radio Live on Facebook, Twitter, and the website, Brant.
CBRadioLive.com.
There you go. CB Radio Live on Facebook, Twitter, all the things. It's at Wild Talk Radio, at CB Radio GUE, at King Kittens, at Lone Jumper, at Wade Manson, at K-Sheeks. This is at Kyle Driver, at King Kittens. They're here. They're doing things. Get K-Sheeks stuff on Redbubble. Link in his description on Twixer and Instagram at Kyle Driver.
Indeed.
Final thought for the show, Keish.
I don't know. I enjoyed it. I was a little worried that it was, I mean, I was happy that it was only 4 hours for the main show because other people usually express that it's going to be more than that. So I thought job keeping it tight.
They gave you 6 hours with 2 hours of pre-show, so that's where they give you your extra time.
Whatever. I mean, I don't count that because everybody.
No, that's great. This show was not as long as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I think going forward they should keep it like this.
But here's the thing, they do. But this was early in the day. It was not. We're not wrapping up at midnight. That helped a lot.
Yeah, well, do more things in the UK so it's easy for us to watch it.
Brent, final thought.
Yeah, overall it was good. I mean, we're running it back next week, so we'll see how it goes.
Less stabbings, more wrestling next week at All Out.
And hopefully no chokeholds.
No chokeholds. We'll see who gets to be on the show, maybe. We'll see. The more news to come. Anyway, this has been CB Radio Not So Live, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. We'll see you all week long for a variety of programming, long airwaves of the Wild Talk Radio Network.
WildTalkRadio.com.